Blog Talk Radio.
All right, folks, this is Rebel Rouse and Rich Bergeron.
Yo, it's the Tornado, Tony Pennycal.
And as always, sure, Tom will come on about any minute. We got a lot to talk about this week. We got MMA news, boxing news, great guest, Bobby Chez. Hope I'm pronouncing that.
Awesome.
CZYZ. Good thing we had him in the bag weeks ago, because I've been so damn busy, I would have never been able to get a guest this week. But, yeah, he's coming on at 9:15, and this is the icing on the cake of all the boxing guests we've had. Unless we get Ray Mercer again, which might still be in the loop. I don't know. I'm going to have to talk to the guy. But,
and actually, and I didn't get to talk to you about this last week because we did our show on Tuesday instead of Thursday. When I was getting a lot of Facebook messages for my birthday last week, one of them was Brittany Rogers, the young female fight promoter out of Philadelphia. And she wished me a happy birthday. So I go, I'm like, yeah, when are you going to be a guest on my show? She's like, oh my God, yeah, I know. And when do you do it? And then I told her we usually do Thursdays around 8 o'clock. Haven't talked to her since. I know we've been doing a lot of work down there. So there's a fight card tomorrow night at the Sands up in Bethlehem, which is about an hour above Philadelphia. It's close to Allentown, PA. Only about 30 minutes from where I live.
Jesus was born, right?
What?
That's where Jesus was born, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's not in Bethlehem, PA. So, actually, what was funny, if you go back, I think it was the second Transformers movie they made. I know they made, like, 3 or 4 of them. But I haven't actually seen any of them yet, which is amazing because I love Transformers growing up. But I think it was the second one, part of it was filmed in Bethlehem, PA. And it was the same casting agency that did the Rocky Balboa casting. Because I went there for Transformers, and Diane Harry was like, oh, yeah, you're the appendix guy. Because, if, you know, hey, any publicity is better than none.
Right, exactly. Speaking of
the show. We do have a lot to talk about. We had dueling fight cards last week, HBO pay-per-view and Showtime, or Showtime pay-per-view and HBO, I don't remember. We had a couple world title fights. I think it was Showtime that gave you on, Showtime, 4 12-round championship fights, I mean, which is, you don't get that on most pay-per-view cards. And they were quality fights. It was a great card. I'm actually, I watched part of the Chavez-Martinez fight the next day on YouTube, but I'm glad I sat down and saved the $50 and watched the Showtime card with Canelo Alvarez on there. He looked good. He looked strong as well. I mean, I know Jose Vito Lopez was moving up in weight class to fight him. But, I mean, the first body shot you could see took the breath out of him. The second body shot that knocked him down, literally was just the force of the punch just was literally lifting him off his feet. And you could see Victor Ortiz there, his jaw still swollen from being broken in that fight with Lopez. And I think you could see almost like a look of relief on his face, like saying, thank God that ain't me out there.
Yeah, some big boxing weekend with all that going on. And Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. lost his fight there. That was pretty incredible.
I didn't get to see the whole fight. I saw highlights on YouTube. Martinez is a very good fighter. I have a colleague of mine that is not a big Martinez fan, and he's like, and he correctly said, Martinez right now is, he's a good fighter, but he's not an all-time great. And if you go back to some of his fights, the first fight with Paul Williams, he lost by decision, close decision, had a team down, he was knocked down, fight could have went either way. Second fight, okay, he knocks Williams out, one punch, impressively. But then he wasn't Kelly Pavlik, I thought Pavlik was starting to take over that fight when he got cut. And that's what serves Martinez ahead to win. My colleague George, the one thing he wrote on there, he goes, if he was a middleweight back in like the Hagler days, he'd been like, he was going to roadkill right now. And he's right. But Martinez is making the best out of the situation. You know, but not a great crop of guys at the top right now, but there will be soon. You have, you know, some junior middleweights. You know, I mean, eventually Canelo Alvarez is going to move up. You know, you have a guy, Peter Kid Chocolate Quillen, who just beat Lucy Wright. He's a hell of a prospect out there, undefeated. So you have some pretty good names out there. I mean, you have a guy like Miguel Cotto who could, you know, conceivably move up, who still showed in the fight with Mayweather. He's still got some left in the tank. And Martinez is a guy that I still think can make 154 relatively easily. So if they don't want to go up and meet him, I mean, he could get down at catchweight at 154 and maybe draw a Pacquiao or a Mayweather into the equation. So, and he's not blindingly fast. He's deceptive. He's got good movement, but he's beatable. And I think his southpaw stance helps him a lot. I mean, and Chavez, I mean, if that was a 15-round fight, Chavez wins that fight. I mean, Martinez dominated the first 11 rounds, but he was hurt, and he was hurt bad in that 12th round. I mean, he went down hard, and, like, I know a few people had emailed me the next day saying that was close to being this generation's Chavez Taylor.
Yeah, I guess it could have been. That was pretty intense from what I read. I didn't see any of it, unfortunately. Fortunately, I guess I was at a wedding. weekend. Had a good time. I gave a good speech. It was the best.
Yeah, I just got my phone, so I was going to ask you, how the best man duties go?
Yeah, it went well. It was kind of funny because they made me hold the rings, too, because there's a little kid says ring there. So I had to hold the rings and give a speech. And they were threatening me before I even had the rings. Don't freaking lose that ring. Those rings.
Yeah, right.
I don't have them yet. But I gave the best man speech, and I told a funny story. Everybody got a kick out of about my buddy who was in high school, and he was writing FBI all over his notebooks and his book covers and stuff. And so I asked him one day, I go, what, do you want to be a federal agent or something? And he goes, no, that's my new rap group. It's called Fucking Bad Influence.
You didn't say that, though, did you?
I said effing instead of,
okay.
Real word there, but we're uncensored, so. Everybody.
Well, I mean, we got the wedding I'm going to be in is coming up in about 6 weeks, and my good friend, bless his heart, has not picked the best man yet. And his one cousin, if you saw the YouTube clip of the kid I was training, that's his cousin. You know, we all grew up together pretty much. And his cousin, the kid is nervous about everything. Now, I'm training him to box. Now, right now, he's not training with me because he just went on a new job. He's an electrician, similar to what my dad used to do. And he's in Jersey 6 days a week right now. So he hasn't been training with me. But when we were getting ready to give the bachelor party, everybody's getting ready for a good time. He's sitting there like, what if we get in a fight? What if we get in a fight? I'm like, dude, we're not going to get in a fight. Yeah, but what if somebody starts with this? I'm like, I go out all the time. I think I've been in, like, one fight in, like, the last 10 years, and that was because a guy was drunk and started with me. We're not going to get a fight. But what if we get? And it took me
notice
rules now.
When you know how to fight.
So he pulled me aside the one day we're training about 2 weeks ago. He's like, you know Michael hasn't picked the best man yet. I'm like, yeah, I know that. Well, what's the problem? Well, it could be me. I said, yeah, I know it can be you. It could be me. It could be your brother. It could be this other guy. Well, what does it mean? Well, you know, the person who does have to give a speech. I said, yeah. Well, what if I have to give a speech? I said, you've known him for 35 years. What's the problem? You get up there, you tell some funny stories. Well, I had to give a speech one time, and I didn't write anything down, and I bombed.
Yes,
I said, well,
it's the number one
down.
Fear, but I never had a problem with it.
Well, that's what I said to him. I said, dude, I said, write some shit down and go up there. And I said, I'll write it down for you. And I said, it doesn't matter what you write. It's a presentation anyway.
Yeah.
You can write down.
I had a couple of Captain Morgan and Cokes in me, so it went well.
Yeah. So I said, you can write the best speech in the world, but if you go up there and you start moving like sound like Ralph Crandon, I said, it ain't going to be no good. I got my one younger cousin, her sister, well, I got two younger cousins. The one sister's 28. She's getting married, and 3 weeks. And her younger sister, who's 20, is going to be the maid of honor. Now, her younger sister, the shyest kid in the world, shyest kid I've ever dealt with in my life. And they're like, oh, my God, she's the maid of honor. I hope she's giving a speech. So, like, no, she won't do it. I'm like, and we're at Boston Star saying, you're the maid of honor and you're not giving a speech? And they're like, yeah, she doesn't want to. I'm like, boy, that's really good. Like, that's selfish and everything. And but she can't do the public presentation. Plus, you need people like me to be up their head drunk laughing at her.
Yeah, the maid of honor at this one, I heard, said, oh, shit, he's got cards. Yeah, very good. Right. Well, we got Tom Hankin on the line. I wanted to mention he's been laying in the lurch.
That's it.
Tom, you listen to our wedding story?
Yeah, I'm sorry, though.
It's been a long week.
You listening to our wedding story?
Well, and you know, here's the question. When you go to a wedding when you're single, why do you have to give the gift? I mean, shouldn't they be giving you the gift, right? I mean, here, I'm the guy that's stuck in these disgusting bars at, you know, last call, and I'm looking around, you know, and it looks like another night, you know, going home, watching UFC reruns or something, you know, and here this guy's got someone that loves him, and I got to give him the gift? What's up with that? Huh?
Right.
Yeah, good, you know.
And I don't know how much it costs for an open bar for a small wedding, but, you know, that should be, like, the key thing that you include in your budget, no matter how much money you have to spend on your wedding.
Yeah.
Because that's what killed me. I mean, they would have got more money in their card if it wasn't for saving up for drinks at the wedding.
Well, another one I'm going to do is open bar, so I'm happy. Oh, get this. Now, we get, like, I'm over at my friend's house a few weeks ago, and I'm talking to his fiance, and I'm bitching about my cousin's wedding coming up in a few weeks. So I'm like, yeah, I'm going to my cousin's wedding. I said, they send an invitation to my parents and put my name on it, too. I said, I don't even get an individual invitation. And they're like, yeah, but you don't have to give an individual gift. I'm like, that's right. It's okay. Then my mom gets an extra invitation and kind of hands it to me. I was like, no. They struck it. I said, there's not even a fucking stamp on the envelope. I said, I'm not sending that back. So my friend's fiance is like, well, you're getting an individual invitation for ours. I said, wait a minute. I said, I'm in the wedding. Why would I get an invitation? So I get my invitation yesterday. My name's spelled wrong. So I text my friend's fiance. I'm like, Natalie, you know we love you. And I looked at my parents. Theirs were spelled wrong. So I said, you know we love you, but you spelled my name wrong. She goes, it's not my fault. She goes, that's Michael, a.k.a. the Green. I said, oh, it must take 30 years to learn how to spell a person's last name, right? And I've only known him for 29. My own friend fucked up my last name.
That's rough. Anyway.
Yeah, a little bit.
Let's shift gears here. We're not the Wedding Unlimited show. We got a lot of boxing and MMA to talk about, for sure.
What a weekend! What a weekend! And I'll say this much: you got to give Martinez credit for getting up and firing away. I mean, he wasn't holding on like, you know, so many would do. I mean, he got up and he was throwing back. But I would agree with you, Tony. If it was 15, that probably would have been the end of him. But my God, what excitement! And And what about Alvarez? Have we got on that yet? Did I miss any of the talk about Alvarez?
The one thing I said about that fight was I came out there and said, you know, I could see him conceivably moving up soon and taking on Martinez. Alvarez is a young guy. He's still growing. And Jose Zito Lopez, yes, was going up in weight class. The first body shot to put him down really deflated him. But the second one was just pure, you know, force, literally lifted him off his feet. And the one thing I said to Rich was, I could see Victor Ortiz sitting in the crowd with his jaw still swollen from getting broken, thinking, thank God that ain't me out there. Because I don't think Ortiz would have went for it once.
Yeah. Well, I would say Alvarez looks very, very, very special. And apparently he was calling out Mayweather. So, exciting.
Yeah. I don't think Mayweather is going to be able to fight him because they're both going to be under Golden Boy, I think, for a while. The way it sounds, it looks like 50 Cent is taking his talents over to Manny Pacquiao. That's the latest news in the wind. But Manny Pacquiao made the news again because he decided who he's going to fight next. And like Bob Arum wanted, he's going to fight Juan Manuel yet again.
Am I the only guy that has fatigue about that dance? Am I the only one with fatigue there? You know, a little Pacquiao Marquez fatigue?
Yeah,
wow. Four times.
Unless it's in, like, Marquez's hometown. I don't want to say the town he was born in. Let's put it there. And then Pacquiao will have to knock him out. And then I'll watch it. So, I don't know if I'm going to be too thrilled about that fourth meeting. Although, you know, because of Floyd Mayweather's jail time, because of all this, you know, this change in perspective, it seems, on his part, you know, we haven't heard the outbursts in a while, even since he got out. So we don't know what the heck is going on. He's been very quiet. He's done a few interviews. And Manny Pacquiao just came out and said, I'm moving on, doing my own thing. And, yeah, I got 50 Cent over here, too. Help me out. And not only that, but he just won a little victory in court over Floyd the other day. This was a piece I just got on Tuesday. And Pacquiao is suing him. Suing Mayweather over claims Mayweather made accusing him of using performance-enhancing drugs. And I actually saw a little of that veiled commentary when I was at Floyd's open workout last year in Vegas. So he's definitely pushed the envelope. Him and his father and his uncle, I guess, were all named in the suit. But Mayweather skipped a deposition last year, and he was later seen burning $100 bills in the Atlanta nightclub at the time he was supposed to be giving his deposition in Las Vegas. And I guess as a result of that, it's been finally decided Judge Larry Hicks ordered Mayweather to pay Pacquiao's attorney's fees of $113,518.50, as well as court costs in the amount of $774. And the judge noted that Pacquiao attorneys David Moroso and Harrison Whitman aren't doing pro bono work for the champ. They're actually charging him one lawyer $6.95 an hour, the other one $4.95. So big doings over there in court. But from what I heard, that wasn't the only thing that Mayweather ignored in that case. I don't think he's really taking it seriously at all. And then this comes right after he gets out of jail. So he's probably not focused on that kind of stuff right now and maybe caught it by surprise. But he's still got that in his back pocket. I mean, that's like it's like in his piggy bank on his mantle right there, that money. So I don't think it's going to bother him. And in MMA news, of course, we got Jon Jones fighting this weekend. Vitor Belfort. Big fight. The UFC contest there. We had the Ultimate Fighter, and it premiered the other day. And that was sort of an interesting broadcast because of the sponsor. Did you guys notice the, or did you notice, Tom, the new sponsor of TUF?
Yeah, how about that, huh?
NOS Energy Drink.
How about that?
Yeah, and did you notice that Shane Carwin did not touch the can at all?
Now, that I didn't notice.
Well, I only say that because I saw the sponsor. I had no idea that was coming. I saw that, and then I realized Shane Carwin is the same guy that the UFC said could not be sponsored by a company called Good For You Energy, or no, Good For You Sports Drink. It wasn't even an energy drink. It was like a supplement shake or something. So Shane Carwin was sponsored by them, and Lorenzo Fertitta himself came out and put a UFC-wide ban on this company. And it was, you know, reported that it's because of the conflict with Zenergy and Zions, which they owned, I think, at the time, and they own now. So I thought it was really interesting that Shane did not touch the can. I kept watching to see if he could do it. You had to think he would have been pissed off about that, because here the UFC goes, and even while they own Zions, they go out and they get this show sponsored by NOS Energy Drink. And Dana White, I think, drank the whole thing, because God knows he needs more energy, right?
Yeah.
But it was a great show. It was a lot of fights, 2 hours. But unfortunately, the big news is they had their worst opening ratings ever for the show. So you know, even with good news, as you know, the series debuts, you get the bad news with the UFC. Lately, you can't get your break.
And I hate to sound like one note, Johnny, but I wonder if it's the Friday night thing. I don't know. I mean, now, supposedly, I had heard they were thinking of moving it to Tuesday or Wednesday if the ratings would stay bad.
Right. My theory last time was the Friday night fights, so I really don't know why it is so bad this time. I don't really watch a ton of Friday night TV, but, you know, the shows that come to mind right now that are on Friday nights are the UConn Gold, or the UConn show on Discovery Channel, and the UConn Men, and then there's the Gold Show that they're doing Under the Ice now out of the UConn. And I love watching those shows, but I don't know about the other sports watching public. I'd watch Tough over that any day with some people, you know. They get their own thing going. So I don't know what's drawing them away. I don't really see much interesting stuff on Friday night. But,
What is your comments on the fights? Did anything stand out with you?
I kind of was watching it on the road there on a computer, so I don't particularly remember any guy's particular names. But as far as the general content of the fights, they were definitely pretty intense. These guys, you know, they always step up a little bit when they have to fight to get into the house.
Yeah.
And now I'm just glad that it was taped, so these guys have more rest time, hopefully, even though it's still, you know, real action-paced. Hopefully they get more rest between fights and they don't abuse guys like they have in past seasons. But that fight to get into the house, it's so intense. The only thing that sucks about it is it takes 2 hours. You know, who wants to watch a two-hour show?
Yeah.
You know, when you get so much other stuff on TV that you might want to watch. So that's the only drawback, I guess, that you might worry about.
Yeah, and I think we had quite a wide variety of finishes. I kind of like that we had our... you know, a good mix of knockouts and submissions. And still have some guys, though, that are sort of one-dimensional. Like there was the one guy that just kept going for takedowns. That's all he wanted to do. And he finally got the submission. He was, you know, because he popped a few, but he couldn't finish them off. And then he finished with the triangle. But, you know, as I was watching it, I said, I think this guy should be locked up in Tony's basement for 6 months, okay? And all you're going to do is work boxing. I mean, it's not against the rules. You know, you could at least try some cosmetic stand-up, if nothing else.
Right.
You know what I mean? And he...
Well, that
I mean,
was the
he
thing,
was,
too, is you heard Dana White talking about, you know, these things that went to fights that went to decisions and just being overly critical of the style of these guys because they weren't entertaining. And he was really, like, hammering that point. It's kind of neat to hear him say it basically out loud. You know, you got to put on a show, basically. You know, that's what we pay you for.
Well, but then again, I would ask Dana, who's in charge of the fighter selection, you know? of course, I mean, overall, I'm not complaining. All those guys really gave it everything they had. But, you know, this one guy that I was thinking of is just, he's got, I can't believe he hasn't rounded out his game, at least made some effort. You know, whether you're a stand-up guy or a ground guy, I mean, you've got to at least shift gears a bit, you know. And
I have a favorite, and I don't know the guy's name, like I said, but the one guy that stands out, I think it's Bristol Marundi, if I remember correctly. He was the guy that had been like a trainer in all these camps of famous athletes that are famous MMA guys. And, you know, I heard his backstory. He had a real quick submission one, I think, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. Yeah, he beat George Lockhart, that Marine. Yeah, and in fact, Bristol fought in the IFL.
He might be a real thorn in a lot of guys' sides because he's got the experience. So, he's my dark horse favorite going into this. But there are a lot of good strikers in the field, too. You know, the stockbroker guy they were talking about.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, he was impressive.
The uppercuts through the uprights there. That was nice. Taking the guy out there. I think it was a first round knockout or a second round.
Right. Now, you know, there's that old cliche that you can't always judge a book by its cover. And there you go. You know, you bump into that guy in a bar, and then who's this guy? Then you wake up a week later, and oh, God, what happened? Yeah, that was very impressive, too. So we'll see how it goes. It sounds like, and then at the end, I don't know if you caught the end there, but it looks like there's going to be a lot of chaos in the house. And, you know, you have to wonder how much of that is encouraged for ratings.
Exactly. That's what made me think of the lawsuit there with, forget his name now, little bald
Mikey Burnett.
Mikey
Remember
Burnett.
That? Right, that's
we're doing four downs into the wall, breaking
yeah,
a shoulder.
Yeah. Well, that was season four where they had the old school guys back. You remember the guys that had come up a little short, and it was supposedly like one last shot at it. Mikey Burnett.
Listen, it's a big lawsuit. You know, I remember reading that when it first came out. Wow. This is pretty bold stuff. But, there's definitely going to be a lot of drinking this time around. I don't know whether they did that for ratings or just because. But it also seems like there's a lot more in-house confrontations. Like, usually they'll show a clip of guys, like, wrestling outside or something, you know. Something stupid and an actual fight breaks out for 2 seconds. But it seems in this one, like, you got a lot of hissy fits going on. And you got maybe some physical contact between these two guys in the house. They did do some fast clips there, but it definitely seems like the drama level is going to be high.
You know, and I guess the cynic in me has to say that if they were concerned about low ratings, you know, there was a lot of coaching back here. Say, come on, guys, we got to save the show. It's on you now. Let's put, you know, you're here to be actors as well as fighters. Let's go. So I don't know, but you got to wonder.
Yeah. Well, it's only a year on Fox, I think, the deal that they have, so been a real disappointment for a lot of ratings figures, and the timing of a lot of stuff could have something to do with it. The network, maybe, I don't know. I mean, I don't know why they're not doing as good as they used to do. Spike TV, I think, might be in a lot more homes than some of these offshoots of Fox that they put this stuff on. That's the other thing.
Well, I know everyone is very upset about this fuel situation. Very few homes have fuel. And there's to this day, there's still a lot of complaining. Yeah, there's a lot of complaining on the underground about fuel. So.
But the thing with that, the UFC will always say, well, we already got paid, you know, so I don't know what you're talking about. So I don't know. That could have been a decision with the NOS energy drink. It was based on Tuff owns the show. I mean, Fox owns the show, basically, so they're going to get their own sponsors and make nothing of Zions. But it's always been interesting to me because the Tuff franchise has always strayed away from Zions after that story that I put out there broke. And the bankruptcy happened. They've never really showed Zions more than a guy drinking it here or there. But it's not been an official sponsor since those first days where the convicted felon was running the company. So it's kind of been interesting to watch that develop, and now come full circle, they got a new energy drink sponsor. So it's weird. But anyway, we have another story here. It's a murder mystery in boxing I wanted to highlight here. Believe it or not, Sean Cummins, former WBA light middleweight champion, was discovered this last week dead at his UK apartment. His dismembered body parts stuffed into the freezers at his home. And this guy was nicknamed the Governor. He was discovered at his bungalow after neighbors complained of a stench coming from the property. He was last seen alive on September 1st. And this guy, a tough life. I mean, he was paralyzed in an accident, I think about 10 years ago. And he had done some enforcing, I think, for the local bookies after he stopped fighting. But he had a pretty impressive career. Once he was paralyzed, he found bodybuilding and did some weight training. And actually, this was after after his boxing career. Sorry. Started to work the door of collect debts that were turned down by most debt collectors, and was the bodyguard for Lee Ryan of the boy band Blue. And it's a pretty crazy life there. Found dead last seen September 1st. But he was the Intercontinental Lightweight Champion in 1992, and he successfully defended the title the following year against Mickey Hughes. So, interesting story. I don't know if you ever heard of the Governor. Have you, Tony? Hello? Tony, you with us? Is this you? Tom, you there?
I'm here, yeah.
All right, I guess we lost Tony. Tony dropped off the call. I was wondering why they're so quiet. Anyway, yeah, that's a pretty interesting story. I thought maybe it had something to do with his old life. Collected debts. Maybe he got in debt to the people. Ironic things like that happen sometimes. Tony.
Yeah.
Hey, what happened to you?
What happened? You got disconnected.
I guess so. I was like, let's go to Tony. And Tony wasn't there.
Yeah, the last thing, I had been off a few minutes. The last thing I was talking to you guys about, it was the Alvarez-Lopez fight. And
we were talking about MMA for a while, so I thought you were just being quiet because of that. But we were talking about the Governor, a little murder mystery out there in the UK. There was a guy by the name of Sean Cummins, S-H-A-U-N, Sean Cummins, and he was the former WBA light middleweight champion, and he was found dead. He was in a wheelchair from a motorcycle accident already, but I guess he freezes at his own house. Thomas Dunkley, 28, appeared at the court on Saturday, charged with murder. I forgot to mention this part. I guess it's not so much a mystery. I think they do know who did it. Dunkley was arrested in Wakefield, West Yorks, and charged with murder last Friday. It has not been revealed in court what caused Mr. Cummins' death. And Dunkley, no fixed address, wore a gray tracksuit and entered no plea during the hearing. So, crazy, crazy story there. Another story sort of surfaced over the last week and a half or so here. ESPN and HBO are going to start working together. They announced a multi-year, multi-tiered boxing programming and marketing agreement, which includes coordinated support for major pay-per-view boxing events, including sharing programming content, cross-promotion elements, highlight packages, and additional assets to be featured across multiple ESPN and HBO platforms. And the deal allows ESPN's news and information platforms, most notably SportsCenter, to have access to content and information surrounding marquee HBO pay-per-view boxing matches. And ESPN will also air the HBO All Access Series 24/7 in advance of HBO pay-per-view bouts. ESPN 2 will air the two-part 24/7 Chavez Jr. Martinez. That's Thursday, back-to-back. That was last Thursday. But HBO's pay-per-view arm has the World Middleweight Championship fight between Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. and Sergio Martinez at 9 p.m. Saturday. That's what they just had. So I wonder if anybody watched ESPN over the weekend and noticed that taking effect, that little partnership there. Obviously, just started.
I did not catch any. The only ESPN I really caught this weekend was, you know, SportsCenter. You know, just a recap of some football and baseball. That was really about it on there.
And we might see him. Might see him this Sunday, Tony. Amir Khan split with Freddie Roach recently. It's another news item. Freddie's supposed to be at this Brockton Marciano statue deal. So.
Well, did you hear what Amir Khan's management team wanted? They wanted Freddie Roach to. They wanted Amir Khan to be pretty much his only pupil. They wanted for Freddie to pretty much split the ties with Manny Pacquiao on there. And Manny Pacquiao, if you're talking about the three main guys that he's been training, he's actually in a little bit of a slump right now. You figure Chavez just lost. Pacquiao was robbed back a few months ago, but the fact of the matter is still a defeat. And then, of course, you had the near con fight. But why would Freddie Roach in a million years ever say, let me dump Manny Pacquiao, which is, pretty much my most high-profile client out there, for a flawed fighter in a near con? And I know, because I was on a discussion just a day or so about this, and it was on our Facebook, and they're like, okay, who should Amir try to hire now? And I know someone said Emmanuel Stewart, someone said Emmanuel Stewart, but I think he's going with Virgil Hunter, Andre Ward's trainer. And you're like, yeah, that's all great. I mean, Virgil Hunter is a good, very good trainer. He's an exceptional trainer. But the fact of the matter is, he cannot teach chin. Right? I mean, you get certain great fighters out there. I mean, if Muhammad Ali had a glass jaw, he never would have been as great as he was, especially later in his career when he got hit more. His chin was what was his saving grace. You can't teach chin.
Yeah, and, that's pretty ridiculous. I didn't even know that side of the story, but, it wasn't like Amir Khan had a problem with Freddie Roach, even though they kind of, the headlines made it seem like, they must have hit him. As far as his techniques, I didn't hear any of that. He was, like, thanking them up and down for his time with them, so I didn't hear any animosity as far as the way they were trying to take him. They wanted him all to themselves. Interesting. So he's a little spoiled brat. Anyway, another story. Holyfield is back in the news. He's got his child support debt to up to $563,900.
Ow!
Imagine on that one. That's rough. And I don't know whether that's just one court, because this is according to recent court documents, or everybody. I guess he has a lot of kids, so it's tough to keep up with. But that's TMZ for you, keeping up with Evander Holyfield's child support. And we could have asked Ray Mercer about whether he's going to pay the kids directly after the South Africa fight, but that didn't get. I guess the last time we talked about this, there was a report from Holyfield that said he loves his kids. He spent a lot of time with them, and they're not concerned about it. So I don't know how true that is, but somebody's taking him to court, so it must be pretty serious. We want that $500,000. Anyway, that's one story there. We got an interesting one, the 30th anniversary of the FDNY versus Police Department. That's coming up. Where is it? There it is. Tullamore DEW Irish Whiskey is presenting it. Believe it or not. There's going to be a lot of drunk law enforcement people out there. FDNY and NYPD face off against each other for the 30th time on Friday, November 9th at 8 p.m. at Madison Square Garden. And the event benefits the Atlas Cops and Kids Boxing Program, as well as the Building Homes for Heroes organization. And the rivalry dates back to 1982. And from what I remember from talking about Bobby McGuire, he was in a couple of those early ones. He really got the team started back in the day. So wish those guys the best. I know that they just had a show, I think on the 14th, we talked about before, the New England guys, and they clobbered us the last time they came up to Fox Mulder, so I'm sure they had a nice bunch of wins at home too. But it's good to see them continuing the legacy there and adding new events and doing the old standbys. November 9th, it's going to be a good weekend for it. Let's see what I got. Another former guest of ours in the news here. 20-year-old junior lightweight prospect Toka Khan Clary is was on Thursday evening's 11th annual Fight to Educate Pro-Am boxing card at the Verizon Wireless Arena. It was headlined by Demetrius Andrade versus Alexis Hurricane Helorez. I don't have the results of that, but I probably will have something on the blog tomorrow. It's probably going on right now. It's on Thursday night, 20th. Right? What am I saying? All right, anyway, let's see what else we got here.
Well, Rich, while you're looking that up, I do want to say I did get your email with some photos of the putting together the Marciana statue, and I knew it was going to be big. Holy shit, I didn't know it was going to be that big. That's freaking awesome, dude.
Yeah, it's pretty damn big.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
I'm not ashamed of it. The face really doesn't look all that much like them. But
I know some people had said that, but I can see the resemblance.
Right.
You know.
And
which is also pretty cool. I'm still working on my plans for this weekend. Because my father's coming up with me, so I know he'd be really excited to come up with this. And he was just in Connecticut up until today. If he was still stuck up there working, the original plan was I was going to swing up to Connecticut and pick him up on the way. But now it looks like he and I are going to ride up. We're probably not going to get there until Sunday morning. We thought about getting there early. We thought about maybe getting a hotel, staying a day or so. But what we're going to do is we're probably going to leave here like 3 o'clock in the morning. Which is about like 6.5-hour drive up to Boston, so it would get us there in the morning time frame. I'll still talk to him and see if he wants to go the night before, but if he doesn't, we'll leave, at 3 or so in the morning, get there around 9:30, 10 o'clock, get the town up a little bit, and then get ready to go to the unveiling, and then go home that night, leave around 4 or 5 o'clock. So next year you got to come down to Philadelphia because it's been announced that they're working on getting the Joe Frazier statue done. And what's kind of cool is the Joe Frazier statue is going to be at the site of the old Philadelphia Spectrum, which has since been torn down. And now what they have there, it's kind of like a sports bar and nightclub called Xfinity Live. I've been there a few times. The place is unbelievable. It's huge. We got about 1,000 huge TVs there, but they're gonna set the Frazier statue up there. So that'll be kind of cool.
People are gonna be spilling drinks with Joe Frazier all night long.
Yeah.
That's rough. But Joe Frazier was definitely a popular guy, and no matter where they put the statue, people will come. So.
There was a lot of people arguing, and a lot of people in the Philadelphia area were arguing. And I see it online all the time. People are like, "Oh, especially if the Joe passed away last year, sadly. Oh, why does the Joe Frazier have a statue?" And then we keep saying, "Rocky Balboa has a statue. He's a fictional character." I argue this all the time. If people don't understand, that statue came from Sylvester Stallone when he was making Rocky III. And I thought it was cool to have down there, because.
And I don't think they're ever going to move the Rocky statue, the real Rocky statue.
They moved it three times.
They moved the Rocky Balboa statue, but I don't think they'll move the Marciano one.
Well, that's good. I mean, especially because the stadium is named after the guy.
And as always, whenever we talk about statues, I like to remember my time at Virginia Military Institute when the tradition was when you came home to campus drunk, you would go piss on the statue of Cyrus McCormick. Unfortunately enough, had that luck and the luck of being the first guy to invent the cotton gin, and Eli Whitney stole it out from under him, apparently. The Southern story goes. But anyway, and here's another transition piece here. Tony, you must have a better relationship with your father than Ricky Hatton does. You're going on that long.
I know Ricky's planning his comeback, but what's the relationship?
He was arrested. He was arrested on suspicion of assaulting his son the day before he went and announced his comeback. I hadn't been. BBC story here. Ricky Hatton, 61, was given a police caution after the alleged incident outside Ricky Hatton's health and fitness gym in Hyde, Greater Manchester, on Thursday. Hatton, 33, and his father traded punches following a heated argument, an independent newspaper reported. And a spokesman from the police said shortly before 11:45, police received reports that there had been a fight involving two men outside a health and fitness club on Market Street. A 33-year-old man was assaulted by a 61-year-old man who was arrested on suspicion of common assault and subsequently given a police caution. And
it was a former world champion who couldn't whip his own 60-year-old father's ass.
Right. Well, listen.
Hey, does anyone have a video of that? Is this on YouTube? Do you guys know? I mean,
I doubt it.
That would be awesome. You know what?
This is the most you guys
gotta listen. I'm so pissed off about this right now. I'm 36 years old. I'm gonna go whip my father's ass. I'm gonna whip his ass. It's to the point.
Here's the kicker, though. Here's the little sentence that makes the whole article. The statement said that the 33-year-old man was not injured, so as much as his father tried to punch him, he was not. I guess he has good defense.
I would hope so.
But I guess his opponent is still to be named. He's coming back in November in Manchester. He retired with a record of 45-2 after a devastating two-round knockout by Manny Pacquiao in May of 2009. And he was checked into a rehabilitation center out there in London in 2010 after being the subject of allegations of cocaine abuse. And I guess this is not the first scuffle with his father, although it has been the first in recent months. I guess they've had money trouble and off and on bad relationship there, but no surprise. The comeback thing got him going again. But we'll see. We'll see if he's ready. We know he can take a 61-year-old man's punches.
Well, apparently, as according to my one idiotic cousin, I guess when you get into the 60s, you must really lose any semblance of punching power. Because about a year or so ago, we were having a thing over my one aunt's house, and my cousin's 5-year-old son came out and he had a pretty snig and he snuck up and my dad was sick. And when he saw it, he just kind of threw his hands out there. And now, in reality, he grazed the kid. But my cousin, who's a bitch and drunk, she was emailing me like a day or so later, or a couple of days later, arguing about it. She's like, "Your father punched the 5-year-old in the face." I said, "Really? My father is 200-plus pounds. His hands are the size of lunch boxes." I said, if he punched a 5-year-old in the face and the kid had no facial bruising and didn't even get knocked down, I'd lose a lot of respect for my father. especially for a guy that grew up knowing how to fight. I said, yeah, I'd lose a lot of respect for him. You know, I said, couldn't even knock a 5-year-old down? God damn. And punch him in the face? And then I said, you know what? I said, I'll let you have the last word and if that makes you feel better. And someone emailed me the other day, "Oh, you two still aren't talking yet?" I said, "Well, it's been over a year. I gave her the last word." So, I had nothing else to say. She wants to put back. It's amazing. She has the last word. So, I'm like, no. Like, get to it straight.
All right. Well, we got to shift back to MMA here for a second. Dream has officially closed their business operations in Japan. Asian MMA reported this. Real Entertainment, the parent company of Dream, closed the promotion. Their last show was Fight for Japan in 2011, which was co-promoted with Inoki G-Dome Federation and M1 Global. And with the retirement of Fedor, I guess so went Dream, because that was the event headlined by a fight between Fedor Emelianenko and Satoshi Ishii, an Olympic gold medalist in judo. And they've had 4 years and 23 events with 8 Grand Prix tournaments, and they're out the door. Didn't even take the UFC buying them out. But Japanese MMA kind of took a hit here in the United States, because not a lot of those guys who came over from Pride, who you know, actually made the transition and stayed with the UFC, have done all that well. So, you know, the jury's still out whether it's really a good circuit out there that gets them ready to come over here. But they'll live on. They'll be all right. They have plenty of other little upstarts over there that will fill the void. I think they'll get back to it. They had the big earthquake to deal with, so I'm sure that had a big impact on the businesses locally and the fan base there. So it's going to take a little while to get back to where they used to be if they ever get there. So I just want to mention that. The dream is done. The dream's over. Here's an interesting story. Wheelchair MMA in the UK. Do you believe it? True or false? Anybody? True or false?
Well, yes. I guess since you're bringing it up, I'll say true, yeah.
Yeah, definitely true. The UK's Wheeled Warriors and the Ultimate Cage Fighting Championships will make wheelchair mixed martial arts a reality this year. And the upcoming card is slated to take place in South Yorkshire, England. It will feature a series of bouts between fighters who will utilize sports-specific wheelchairs similar to those found in wheelchair basketball or football. And the theory behind the concept is to make the sport accessible to any and all comers regardless of physical limitations. But it's jury's still out as to whether this will be popular.
You know, I keep thinking I'm going to get to the stage in life where I've heard it all, you know. And obviously I'm not there yet. I mean, this is like a chariot race or something. I mean, you know, you like the race of doom or something. I mean, they'll be using, are they going to use the chairs as weapons? I mean, how does...
I don't know. Hmm. Somebody's going to get banged up in the shins, I think, if they're trying to get in too close to each other. But actually, believe it or not, one of the first guests that I profiled on our MySpace page back when that's all Fight News Unlimited was a guy who was in a wheelchair and coached mixed martial arts. He did the training with all the different martial arts and stuff with these guys, and he participated and got medals in grappling tournaments at the time. Also, there's a guy in MMA, Nick Newell. One fully functional arm. He has a perfect 8-0 record. And there's a guy that I saw out in Vegas with one leg, and he almost won his division in the grappling. So, you know, there is that. There's some truth to the old handy capable thing.
Wow.
These some guys they really do take it seriously. And I even read the story. I know it was on our show maybe years ago, maybe. But we talked about at one point there was a kid who was boxing for therapy for Parkinson's, I think. He was in a wheelchair, but they brought him to a boxing gym, and it worked. It was like great therapy for him to get involved and learn the punches. And, you know, they were talking about setting him up in a match with another wheelchair kid.
I just have to question how they're going to do any grappling. How would they – because, you know, your legs are so important. How are they going to stand up? I mean, none of this is making sense to me. I mean,
they have to stay in the wheelchair, I guess. So, I mean, basically, they're probably just going to be able to punch and work arm submissions. You know, you're not going to see a risk-taking choke unless the guys get real creative.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think we'll see any triangles or any Muay Thai kicks or anything, any roundhouse kicks. Wow. Wow.
Brutal. If Tosh Porno was talking about this, I bet he'd have 20 seconds of jokes.
Wow.
For this. But, man, it's going to be tough to do. There's going to be, obviously, some stumbling blocks. They're going to have to figure out what the rules are going to be, who's going to be able to do what, and how the decisions are going to be made on who wins. But, you know, there has been weirder things done. They actually have a... extreme arm wrestling championship circuit we've talked about before, where guys like are basically like kind of handcuffed to the pin that you hold in arm wrestling, and their right hand or left hand, whatever dominant hand, they get to punch the guy, try to try to work submissions on the other.
Oh, yeah, that Art Davey has that, I believe. It's called X-Arm.
Yeah.
Yeah, Art, and in fact, I think last summer they had their second event, so apparently it's still going. I've seen a few things from it, and there's even, I guess you can use submissions and kicks as well as punches.
Yeah.
The decline of Western civilization, huh? Okay.
So who knows whether that's going to take off, but definitely worth talking about.
Well, I have to wish them all the best. I mean, I like to see them with the spirit, you know. I'm just thinking of the logistics of it. I mean, I could even see wheelchair boxing, but, you know, wheelchair MMA, I don't know. It's, wow. But good luck to all of them. They sure have my best.
I mean, if it's entertaining, you know, more power to them. These guys actually already must do sports. They're called
wheeled warriors. So, you know, we'll see. Well, they'll be really wheeled warriors now. but here's another story. Dana White says fighters can prevent future UFC cancellations, and boxing may provide the answer. Can you believe this? A small group of reporters asked UFC President Dana White about the subject of the cancellations and injury bugs biting the UFC, and the panel was with White was Michael Bisping and his trainer, Coach Jason Perillo, at Zuffa headquarters, and they went 90 minutes on all sorts of subjects. But White said, yeah, the fighters need to let us know ahead of time they're hurt. Don't try to ride it out and say, well, we'll see if I feel better. We've always had this weird relationship with Henderson. When Lorenzo and I went to dinner with him, when he came to get his knee checked, he was like, I thought for sure you guys were going to tell me I have to fight. Dude, we don't do that to anybody. We've never in the history of this company told somebody that they have to fight. We don't make people fight. He said Pride used to do some real dirty expletives. Pretty sure he said shit there. I said, well, we don't, contrary to popular effing belief. We don't. So if you're hurt, you're hurt. We never send somebody out there hurt. What you do is you go to the doctor. The doctor checks you out. All these guys have some nagging injuries and they go in there and fight. Nobody is ever 100% like, I feel fantastic. So you go in and see the doctor, and the doctor is like, yeah, you got this problem here, but you can absolutely fight on that. Or, if you move laterally, you might have a little weakness in the knee. Or, I wouldn't fight if I were you. I would get surgery first. Those are the options you get from doctors. And at the end of the day, it's up to the fighter. We don't sit there and go, hey, he said lateral movement might go out sometimes. Not all of the fight, just some of the fight. Don't move laterally. We don't do that. If guys want to fight, they can fight. If they don't, we would never force a guy to fight. So that's kind of interesting there. You know, the fact that Henderson would bring that up, I think, is kind of interesting. Because I never heard that about Pride. I heard there were some shady things about payments at certain times, but I never heard that they would force you to fight like that. But, you know, obviously there's some discussion in this same conversation about fighter insurance. And Dana White said he's so tired of answering this question about fighter insurance. Too many events. The list goes on and on. The problem is, and I had a conversation with somebody yesterday, and I won't say who it is, but I was trying to put this fight together, and I'm calling people. We've talked about this for a long time. You don't know what guys are getting paid. But the biggest problem is we've got too many rich guys. Too many guys that are rich as shit. Money is the biggest detriment to the fight business. It really is. Back when we were just getting going, dudes had to pay the rent. Once the money starts to pile up, you got some of these guys with a few million in the bank. Getting punched in the face every day isn't too fucking cool. But when guys are hungry and they want that fucking money and they want to get out there and get more of it and more of it and more of it, I told one of the fighters yesterday, you know what your problem is? You're fat and rich right now. That's what your problem is. You're laying around with all your money in the bank, and back in the day, you would have been training and been in shape. And he said, yeah, Dana, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. I'm going to go get in shape. So I don't know how much that's Dana's ego talking or that really happened, but I think that's pretty interesting if he sees it that way.
Yeah, so now we can go back to $5,000 for the winner of the tournament, right? You remember, like, circa 1997 or something like that, wasn't it, like those early ones, $1,000 to show up or something? Yeah, that's fascinating to hear that.
And you know what sucks is that, you know, he says that, and he's getting rich for just doing what he does, slapping his gums. He's rich. For coming to the Fertitas with an idea to put their money behind something. And, you know, he gets credit across the board from so many people out there, and some experts even, that say, like, he revolutionized MMA. And, you know, I always try to remind people, he has a staff. He has a very big staff that do much of the grunt work for him. And they rarely ever get the credit. Guys like Joe Silva, I mean, he gets trashed more than anything, I think, about his matchmaking. But it's made the company over the years. He's done well with it. And then you've got, you know, all kinds of people behind the scenes who you never hear their names. And he doesn't mention them. He doesn't bring up people and say, thank you so much, and you've done a great job. You know, he just wants to talk about his opinion and his thing, the way he thinks fights should have gone. And to hear him say something like that, I mean, obviously I didn't hear him, but, you know, to read something like that coming from him, you'd still have to pay the rent.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's not 100 millionaires in the UFC. There's maybe, you know, a handful. I don't know whether he mentioned it before that there's a lot of millionaires. I don't think he put a number on it, but, you know, it's not just the UFC making these guys millionaires either. Maybe it's their association with the UFC, yeah, but these other big sponsor companies are really the ones stepping up and giving the major money to make sure these guys can train. So, yeah, you got to think about that. These guys, the younger guys coming up, maybe not so much superstars, but the guys that are on every card, whenever they ask them to, they step up and they fight, you know, whether they're good or bad. They stick around, but they don't ever get that money if they don't advance and keep winning. You know, they might win one, lose one. There's a lot of guys like that in the UFC, and they sometimes are making chump change. They're always on the undercard, or they're always a low tier fight, so they're not making millions, and they're barely scraping by. And most of the time, in those cases, it's because of their sponsors, not because what they're getting per fight. For a fight, that shit doesn't even cover them bringing their training staff in most of the time for some of these guys.
You really have a good point about the staff, and especially with Joe Silva, because it seems like he's almost like an offensive lineman in football. You know, when he does his job right, he doesn't get the credit that I think he deserves. But then if it's one of those bad cards that, you know, you can't hit a home run every time, and of course he gets the blame for that, doesn't he? You notice that? You know,
yeah,
that,
always. Always the GOAT, never the hero.
Yeah.
But, you know, Dana gets paid to be the obnoxious fool sometimes, and he's good at it. He makes good money doing it. I just feel like he's so disconnected from whenever he actually was serious himself about maybe being a fighter, which I don't know when that was. But, you know, obviously to teach it, you've had to have done it at some point. He was a boxing coach and boxer size instructor at one point. So I'm sure he learned the craft and went in with other guys and did some sparring at some point. So you'd think he would have a better grasp on what it takes to be a fighter, or fucking fighter, as you would say.
Yeah.
But I just don't. I don't think he does. Sometimes I think he's out to lunch. And yeah, guys get rich and they get lazy. But if you can't deal with that, don't run around telling people you want to be like the NFL someday. Because there's a lot of millionaires in the NFL, and they don't all lay around, you know. Because they get fat and happy, they still work hard every day. So maybe you need to look at what they're doing, if these guys are doing that. But I think the reason why that's happening is because these guys have worked really hard to get to that point in MMA. They sacrificed their bodies. They've dealt with a lot of injuries. If you ever want to see a good documentary on the fight scene, and especially specifically MMA in the earlier days, where some of these legends came up through before they even maybe got to the UFC, go watch The Smashing Machine.
Yeah,
I've actually continued with the guy it's based on. I'd love to have him on as a guest one of these days, but and Mark Coleman's in it. He was a former guest of ours.
Would you say The Smashing Machine?
The Smashing Machine, yeah.
That's Mark Carr.
Yes, Mark Carr.
Mark
yeah,
Carr.
I mean, come on. How can you forget that? We fought a guy named Brian Carr.
Right.
That's how I always remembered it. Because it was right after, it was 3 months after I fought Brian Carr that I had watched something that Mark Carr was in. He knocked two guys out in like literally combined time of a minute and a half. One of them was like a knee to the face, and the other one he just kind of pummeled. And I was like, shit. I was like, you know, I wonder if he's related to Brian Carr.
I don't know, but Brian Carr was from Vegas, right? Do I know?
No, University of Reno.
Reno.
Yeah.
So I know that Mark Carr works as a car salesman in Arizona right now. So they're in close states. You never know. Unless Brian came from another state to go to school out in Vegas, Reno. I'm working on getting Bobby Chiz connected. I got the same old problem with Skype. I added him an hour ago, but he's not showing up. But I just want to give a little rundown about him while we're waiting. He had a pretty incredible career. If you talk about last opponents alone, I mean, look at the last three guys this guy fought between 95 and 98. Richard Jackson, who was 19-0 at cruiserweight, he knocked him out in the sixth round, TKO. Then he goes on to fight Evander Holyfield in 96, May of 96, lost by RTD, the referee decision.
I think that was retired, which means like they stopped him on the stool after I think he was accepting the sixth round. He was having vision problems in that fight, like something was in his eyes he couldn't see. And he fought Holyfield pretty hard, but a lot of people were saying, man, if Bobby Chiz fought Holyfield that hard, what's gonna happen when Holyfield fights Tyson coming up? And that's when he actually upset Tyson with a few months later.
That's interesting. Well, we got after that Holyfield fight. He fought a guy who was 33-1, and named Corey Sanders for the World Boxing Union Heavyweight title in his very last fight. He lost that by TKO in round two and hung up the gloves. So just two losses in a row, and that was it. That was enough for him to know.
And I believe that was the South African Corey Sanders. There were two Corey Sanders fighting around that same time. South African Corey Sanders was a southpaw, tremendous puncher with exceptionally fast hands. He actually has a second round knockout over Vladimir Klitschko, and then Vitaly came back and avenged that for Vladimir. There's definitely no shame in losing to Corey Sanders. There was also another Corey Sanders around the same time, Corey King Kong Sanders, who was around 280 pounds. Big guy, and he was more of like, you know, a physical type fighter. He wasn't a world beater. Had a few decent fights. His claim to fame was after Mike Tyson retired, they had gone on that circuit and they were doing like exhibitions because Tyson needed money. Those are the two Corey Sanders from the 90s.
Well, he had a pretty impressive career, and there's another loss in 94, but he had a string of wins, sandwich and all that, and prior to that, he lost for the IBF light heavyweight title. So he lost 1989 there. He had a couple back-to-back losses, but only 8 losses in his whole career to 44 wins with 28 knockouts. Only was knocked out 5 times, and no draws. definitely a lot of games on that record too. He didn't fight any real pushovers at all. You look at the end of his career, of course. You want to judge him by that? Well, go back to the beginning, even more impressed. Because it's 5th fight. Guess who he fights in 1980? Bruce Strauss, who's 32-13-2 in his 5th professional.
The mouse. Yeah.
Knocked him out in the 4th round. So that's a good way to know what kind of guy Bobby Chess is. And a few fights later, 1981, February, he fought Danny Long, who was undefeated at 18-0, knocked him out in the 5th round. And 2 fights after that, he fought Oscar Alvarado, who was 56-8-1. And all these fights were in New Jersey, so New Jersey fans got a lot to be thankful for watching some good Bobby Chess fights there. And he's with the Find a Dream group, and we want to thank them for setting us up with all these boxers. I'm just trying to connect with them right now. Working on a pain-in-the-ass Skype application here. But we'll get them on. And, he had an incredible life otherwise, too, outside the ring. He's actually lucky to be alive, according to his Wikipedia page here. He had a quick start to his career, but before that, in the amateurs, he was almost in a plane crash. He was injured. So what happened was he was injured. He wasn't on the plane that crashed with all his Olympic teammates. If I can find it, I'll confirm that story here. I know it's on here somewhere. Oh, here it is. 1980. Was the United States Amateur Boxing Team. And it was a Polish Airlines plane crash in Poland in 1980. And he was in an automobile accident 1 week before the trip, so he wasn't on the plane. So incredible. Incredible that he's alive and that he had this kind of career and is still out there promoting the sport and a good little charity there in Find a Dream. Now, if we can only get him on the phone. Everybody can be happy. All right, let's go. 200 matches found. A lot of Bobbies out there.
I'm here.
Okay, I went out there for a second. Oh. Did you guys hear dead air?
Well, I think it's starting to connect when you said it, so.
Usually when I go out, it disconnects, but it didn't disconnect. It just went out for a while. Anyway, I'm working on the connection here. You guys got any interesting news tidbits? Are waiting. How about the big U.S.
Apparently, Frank Mir is injured, and he's not going to be able to fight Cormier. So that's kind of interesting news. On while we're on this injury kick, which seems like that's the main topic every week anymore. You know,
it's a cross promotional injury, but
yeah.
Strike Force 2.
Yeah.
So that's kind of interesting. I did read part of your link you sent to me about John Jones' weaknesses. That's some real in-depth analysis. I only got about halfway through it one day, and I said, oh, gee, let me see how much is left.
Yeah.
I saw how much is left later, right? Of course, I never got around to reading the rest of it, but I like the pictures and the analysis there. And Tony, you would like this, too, because I think he sent it to you, but Rocky Marciano plays a starring role in this story. Talking about footwork and punch placement and all that, and the way that John Jones has got his weight loaded over his lead leg rather than the way Rocky fought, which was mostly the weight on his back leg. Interesting stuff, you know.
It's actually funny you say that, because they were talking about on there was a boxing card a few weeks ago, and I apologize for not remembering off the top of my head exactly who they were talking about here, but they were talking about the one subtle difference that the fighter had made was back in the day he had kept most of his weight on his back foot, he kept most of the weight on his front foot, and then he was putting more on his back foot and trying to sit down more on his punches. And yeah, that is very interesting, because the one thing I always say when I talk about boxing, when I train people, is everybody wants to punch, which obviously is understandable. That's what, you know, as a woman told me one time, that's what boxing is, it's just punching people. And I said, really? I said, you don't build a house by putting your roof on first, do you? I said, no, you build the base up. I said, when I build a fighter, I build a house. I start you with the base, I build your footwork up, and then I build it up so you have a strong foundation. You know, that way, when the winds get a little heavy, you don't crumble.
Right. Yeah, it's a very in-depth one. If anybody is rooting for Vitor to win, I should hope you're sending, if you know how to get it to him, you're sending this article to him. It's called Killing the King.
Yeah, I'm sure he's aware of it, but I've never known him to really have outstanding inner thigh kicks, you know, around Muay Thai roundhouse kicks. So we'll have to hope his hand speed can pull off a miracle.
I think, oh, geez, if I was an MMA fighter, what kind of style would I have? And I tell you, I watch a lot of these fights with these guys where they kick the lead knee, and they do a lot of leg kicks. And they just circle. Now, if I was a boxing heavy guy or a striking heavy guy, you know, I was up against a guy like John Jones who had a lot of height and does that with his lead leg, I would just leg kick him to death.
Mm-hmm.
Run, you know, just stay away from those long arms.
Yeah, and like that article said, like what Shogun did was kick him on the outside of the thigh, and that just led to a takedown. It's the inner thigh that should be a good target, so we'll see.
All right, well, we're moments away here from connecting with Bobby.
All right.
Here you go. It's a ring. There's hope.
Hello,
Bobby.
Yes.
Hey, how's it going? This is Ramble Rousing Rich Bergeron from the Fight This Unlimited Combat Sports Show.
All right, I'm having a little trouble hearing you. A little bit of static.
Oh, okay. It might improve as we go along. If not, let me know, and we'll just connect and call you right back. Sometimes that works.
It's a little better right now. It's a little better, so it's legible.
All right. We also have our boxing rain man, we call him, Tony the Tornado Pentacal, on the line.
What's up, Bobby? What's going on?
And we also have our third co-host, Psychic Tom Padgett.
Good evening, Bobby.
Thank you. When am I going to win the lottery?
Let's see. I think December is a good month, okay? December is a good month for you. Yeah.
Right. We'll figure it out.
Okay.
All right, Bobby. So tell us a little bit about yourself. How did you first get into the sport of boxing?
I started boxing when I was, actually, I started formal boxing in the gym going 5 and 6 days a week when I was 10 years old. My father made myself and my brothers, Vince and Tony, who are 9 and 7 respectively, go to the gym every single day, but Sunday, 5 days a week. My mother would take us after school on Saturday, my father would take me. And he actually, I have home footage of me at 3 years old, him teaching me how to box, swinging, punching, him smacking me back not too hard. And, I mean, I remember my entire life from the earliest of ages at 4, him teaching me how to hit a heavy bag, how to defend myself. I grew up in a not-so-nice area, East Orange, in the, let's just say, the down tribe section. I was the minority of the day. Everybody was black and Hispanic, which was fine with me, but, you know, it caused us for a couple of fights.
Yeah, I can imagine. And we just talked about a few minutes ago, you're actually pretty lucky to be alive, considering the, you know, the plane crash there.
Well, you know, it seems that I keep beating or cheating death quite a bit. In 1979, a couple of days after Christmas, I got in a bad car accident, missed a plane flight, the U.S. boxing trip to Poland, the plane went down, crashed, everybody died, and, you know, I wouldn't be here, I would have been gone, you know, 2 years ago. So I would have had no career. I wouldn't have become a world champion once, twice, or three times. But subsequent to that, many years later, I was in a car accident 5 years ago. I was sleeping in the back seat. The guy who was driving, we actually got to drive it and be a designated driver. I was sleeping in the back seat. He hit a tree, and my friend, whose car he just totaled, it was not insured. $158,000 Mercedes, he just totaled, it was not insured. So my friend went after him, and I blacked out from my concussion, and a car caught fire and burst into flames, and he was truly burnt up for about 13 minutes. And the doctors said that if I was in another 2 minutes, I would have never got out of there. Then they put me in a helicopter, took me to the hospital, induced a coma, and they told my girlfriend and my friend who was in the back of the car with me at the time, they said, look, he's never coming out of the hospital. We have maybe 3 to 5 days to live. And even if he lives, he's going to be on a tracheotomy. The rest of his, you know, he's going to have a tracheotomy in his neck for the rest of his life on the breather. And then 2 weeks later, they said, the son of a gun's getting better, but we don't know why. So I told them, and I told them in a joking fashion, I said, I have something called the freak genetics. And he said, that's not a technical term. I said, no kidding.
Yeah.
And it was really, it really got ugly. I had pneumonia. My lungs collapsed. I got MRSA in my throat. I somehow in my coma pulled out my feeding tube. They had an emergency surgery. I'm slid up the middle. 18% of my full body was second and third degree burns. And eventually, the doctors really irritated the hell out of me. They wouldn't let me work out to rehab myself with that MRSA in my throat. I said, look, you guys are killing me. So they're making me sit in this bed. So eventually, when I'm not contagious anymore, I signed myself out. And when I signed myself out of the hospital, it was against the doctor's advice. He said, you shouldn't do this. You don't know what you're doing. You know how dangerous this is. And I couldn't. I'm being in a coma for 28 days. Your body atrophy. I went from 235 buff to 202 weak. I mean, I couldn't without collapsing. I couldn't walk without a walker. Everything was bad. And I went home, went to my friend's house, got a gymnast house. I worked out for 2 weeks, day and night, 3-4 times a day. The last time I ate myself, walked back into the hospital 2 weeks later, and pushed the button for the ICU, walked in, and the nurses started crying. And the doctor said, he said, there's no way you look as good as you're this healthy. Can't be. He said, can't be. I said, no, you guys may know medicine better than me, but you don't know my body better than I know my body. I'm fine.
That's awesome.
And the doctor said, you were dead. Twice you flatlined on the table. He said, no one in the history of this hospital who's as far bad as you were has ever healed this well, ever. He said, I just don't even know why. So that's, I guess I got an inner toughness that just won't quit.
That's awesome.
I'm good at quitting.
Yeah, it reminds me a lot of me because I've gone into respiratory arrest once. I fell off a roof, broke a bunch of bones, and the guy I was with said my head brushed a blade of grass, so I could have easily died in both situations. More compelling.
we're lucky or just tough. And yeah. You know, it's funny, but if you think about it, in your mind's eye, as you go back to the time when you had those issues and those problems, you can't really fix them all with your mind, although you can contribute to it by being tough.
Right.
But at the end of the day, I tell people this all the time. I said, at the end of the day, if you didn't choose your parents, you never chose to be born, you had no choice what ethnicity you were going to be or what religion they were going to force on you. You had no choice about your genetics or your chemical or physiological makeup. So let's just say, for the sake of our argument, you were born to Charles Manson and Elaine Wornos, serial killer. Your chances of having a good life are not really good. No fault of your own.
Funny you say that, because it was genetics that saved me. When I fell off the roof, I actually was born one of only two people I know of in my family, born with fused vertebrae. So where I landed on my upper back, I could have broke my neck, but the vertebrae were just fused together, so it wouldn't break.
So the horrible coincidence in my life to this story is that my grandfather, who was born in 1906, was in a bad accident when he was 17, and he was in a coma for 2.5 weeks. And when he came out, the doctor said to him, he said, listen, this is taking its toll on your body. It's done a lot of damage. He said, you'd probably not live past 40, 42, maybe 45. The doctors were dead. The doctor's kids were dead. And some of my grandkids were dead. And my grandfather was still alive in 2007.
So he was 101?
100 years and 1 month.
Wow.
He outlived everybody in our family. I mean, literally.
What you call a fighter right there.
I can, but indirectly, because it's my mom's dad, I guess I have some of those genes. So I'm not going anywhere just yet.
Awesome. Well, looking back on your awesome career, is there anybody on that list that you would consider the toughest fight you ever had?
Well, you have to take into consideration the definition of good and the definition of tough. Tough is your ability to take an ass whooping. Good is your ability to give one. The best fighter I probably fought, some might say, is Holyfield, but he didn't have his best day. Or Corey Sanders, the WBU heavyweight world champ, 6'7", I mean, 6'6", and just destroyed me. I was just way past my prime for that. But the toughest guy I ever fought was a guy named Mike Fisher, who I hit him so hard, so often for 10 rounds, that my hands swelled up like the size of grapefruits. That's how hard I hit him. And every time I hit him, he would just spit out the blood and then start talking to himself. He said, oh, I missed that one. I should have blocked. And I looked behind me. I thought he was talking to somebody else. I never experienced that before. But tough he was. I mean, this tough.
Yeah.
I know that feeling. That was quite
a visual sport. I guess he was talking to himself.
he was that kind of guy. Yeah.
I had told a guy, actually Rich, had beaten the guy later that year. We're in the amateurs. He was, and when you say tough, is willing to take a beating. I hit him in the first round with a left hook. I started walking to the neutral corner, and he caught himself going down, shook his head, and smiled at me. I said, oh, shit, I think I just broke my left hand. So in the second round, I hit him with the right hand. He buckled again. I started walking in the neutral corner. Caught himself before he went down, shook his head, and said, oh, shit, I think I broke my right hand. I said, I can't hit this guy no more. That was one guy that was willing to take an ass whipping. There was another guy, and I have not seen this guy in 17 years. And we 16 years, we beat each other unmercifully. And, I mean, I knocked him down 2 times. He got up 2 times. He hit me, split my lip open. We beat each other senseless. Hadn't seen the guy in years, hadn't heard from him in years. I get an email from Rich because he found a copy of our fight on YouTube. And he contacted Rich, and Rich forwarded it to me. I said, oh, please don't let this guy be asking for a rematch all these years later. I said, I don't think I can beat a human being that bad again and have him smile at me. He just wanted to say, thank God.
Sometimes when you hit somebody with your best shot and they look at you and smile, it takes all the wind out of you.
Oh, it does. I train guys now, and like I said, I mainly, we just do it just so I can, I just try to help, you know, keep, I got some teenagers trying to keep them off the streets and everything. I have a little boxing gym I run in the basement. And the one thing I tell them, I said, yeah, boxing is so much mental and so much psychological, and I talked about one guy, and we were fighting men in Virginia. It was in his home gym, and he came, he brought it to me in the first round. And he was trying to intimidate me at the weigh-in. He was trying to stare me down. And I'm looking at him. I'm like, all right. I'm like, I've talked to this guy before, so I know he's trying to put the bravado act on because I know he's scared. But I'm like, let me go mess with him. So I walk up to him. I'm like, man, good luck tonight. I hope you're going to do well. And he looked at me like, what are you talking about? So we get in the ring, and he brings it to me. And I hit him with a couple shots. He went down, popped up. And after about another couple minutes, he started huffing and puffing. And I made sure he saw me smile at him just to let you know that I know that you ain't got nothing left, and here I come now. Now it's my turn.
Well, a lot of people think that boxing is strictly about reaction and conditioning. Conditioning is probably the most important thing because even if you're great and you're tired, you can't. But I will tell you that there are times when, and I always used to call me a thinking man's fighter, not just because of my mental IQ and all, but I beat some of the guys I fought because I was smarter than they were and I outfought them. And when you can walk people in the corners and set them up and they don't see it coming and it works, it's a thing of beauty.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
Anybody that says boxers are dumb, they need to go look you up in the dictionary, right?
Well, you know what I've been saying for years is that boxers get a bad rap because think about this going back in your mind's eye to yesteryear. Go back into the 20s, early 1900s, the 30s, the 40s, the 50s, whether it was the Irish coming over here, the Jewish or the German, the Italians, the suppressed minority of each era, of every single era, those people rose to a great height in boxing. And now it's predominantly black and Hispanic in many ways. But that's who did it. And the fact that I had, a genius IQ and a straight A student, and I was a white kid from the suburbs, you're like, he can't beat anybody up. He's white, right? But can you get a fight? I get the rhymes all the time.
Well, Bobby, I think one of your smartest fights was when you fought Murray Sutherland. And I remember seeing that fight, and it just seemed like Murray just wasn't going to go, but you were so patient. I mean, I was just so impressed with you that night. Now, was there a time in the fight that you just felt it was going to go 10 rounds and you wouldn't get him out?
No, Murray was very much a survivor. I've seen him with a number of different top 10, top 5 guys. And I think he fought Spinks at one point in time. I could be wrong about that. But I'd seen him fight some very good quality fighters, and he had a reputation as being a survivor. There are guys that you're just not going to knock out.
Yeah.
It's just not going to happen. You may cut them or swell their eye or something like that, but you're not going to put them on the floor for 10 seconds. You're not going to do it. And, and I had a reputation to be one of those type of guys, too. He could beat me to death. If it wasn't a cut or swell on my eye, they could stop until very last fight against Corey Sanders. It was just referee's call. I thought it was an off call, but in retrospect, all we got was more punishment, so that was just past my prime. But, some of these guys don't think, they just react, and they do well. Others think too much and get caught in the middle of the thought, and while they're thinking, they get clipped. So you can't overthink it, and I don't think you should underthink it, but you still have to have all the elements. I mean, you think about this. You have to have a certain amount of durability, or you'll never survive the industry. You have to have a certain amount of skills. You'll never survive the industry. Certain amount of speed, offensively and defensively, reflexively, you have to have a certain amount of everything, a certain amount of endurance, a certain amount of determination, a certain amount of will, a certain amount of brains. And you got to package it all in the right time in 1 hour of one day. And you can't have a bad day. And we all know that you can just have your biorhythms could just be off. You didn't have a bad day.
Yeah, good point.
Day that was really popular for the American heavyweights and, for American boxing in general. What do you think about the state of the sport today in this country, and what do you think could be changed to get more people in?
Here, if you follow the evolution of boxing, in the old days, like they used to say for Joe Louis, the bum of the month, he fought whoever he wanted, and he could, if he wanted to, run off his, four or five paydays, he could run off a string of ham and eggers, we might call them today. Not so good people who don't really deserve a shot at the title. So then they started a sanctioning body that if you weren't in the top 10, you couldn't have a shot at the title. So they said, well, he's got a sanctioning body. I don't agree with his choice of the top 10. So out of the WBA, then they started the WBC. And they were both tended to be run by certain names which I'll not mention. And the ranking organizations, the people in the hierarchy of them, 1,000% crooked. 1,000%. I mean, I was even told over one of my title fights, as long as I gave him $20,000 and I was in his box the next day, overnight mail, I could fight whoever I wanted. That's like, and I'm like, what are you, nuts? It didn't make any sense. But then they started the IBF as if the IBF wouldn't succumb to all the power it had, because they were going to keep the WBA and the WBC. Well, we're going to keep them in line because we're going to show them that we're better. So now you have the WBA and the IBF. Well, today you have that with the WBO, the WBU, the WBF, the NBA, the IBC, the ABC, all that. I mean, you better be kidding me. There's like nine sanctioning bodies. Pretty soon it's going to be who's the champ of Fifth Avenue in Manhattan.
it's so diluted.
It's so diluted that it has no credibility.
Yeah.
And I haven't really been watching it for the past few years. I got involved in commodities, which puts me on the phone and on the computer pretty much 12 to 14 hours a day, but I just haven't watched the fights. I don't enjoy them anymore. It's all junk. I mean, did any one of you say Pacquiao lost that fight?
No.
Absolutely not. No way. I scored it.
That's insane.
I had 11 rounds.
Everybody said he lost one round, maybe.
Yeah.
Now, if you're a judge, think about this. If you're a judge and fighter A is kicking the starch out of fighter B, and fighter B wins, you're either incompetent, you just don't know what you're doing, or you have an agenda, you're a crook.
Yeah.
There's no other, even Einstein can't come up with another explanation.
What was the craziest thing about that fight was the stunt at the press conference where he held up a November 10th rematch sign. You know, it was pre-planned. And then to have that outcome follow that, it was just like,
I tell you what, too, I thought that Mayweather got beat when he fought Castillo the first time. I thought he got beat.
Mm-hmm.
And they gave him a split decision to keep him undefeated and keep him to be a money machine. I get it. I'm honest about my career. I fought fights and made more money than a black fighter might have made in that time because I was white and the people wanted to turn on the TV. I got higher Nielsen ratings. They paid me more money. I'm not stupid to that. I still had to win the fights. I still had to beat the men. But I realized I got more than the average minority fighter might have gotten in the same situation back in the day.
I mean, obviously this one didn't result in a rematch, but you think about how many rematches were caused by these kind of errors too. And guys could have been moving up in the ranks, could have been having more dynamic fights with better people and, really making progress for the sport because there were so many different fights. And now you have the situation, because of the controversy, they want a fourth Pacquiao versus... I don't know anybody wants to see that. Really?
Yeah, it gets to the point, though, and this is where it becomes not just offensive for me as a fighter, but offensive for me as a human being. If on that given day, that fighter rose to the occasion who no one gave a chance to win, and he did, in fact, win the fight in actuality, but because of names, reputations, and marquee value, the judges and the promoters took the fight away from him. They're taking away a moment in time that is a piece of history. I mean, you're taking away a young man walking into, it's eternity. My name's in the record books 3 times. I'm immortal. I can't die. For 10,000 years forward, if you want to go back and see who the champ was in those 3 years, in those 3 divisions, it was me. And that will never change.
Right.
And I'm not a religious guy, so I don't believe in heaven, so I got my heaven down on here on earth. I've worked hard for it.
Yeah, I consider myself agnostic. I used to be Catholic, but, I kind of just said, while everybody else is going to church every Sunday, I'll be working to further society.
Well, the three big taboos you can't talk about publicly: sex, politics, and religion. My three favorite things to talk about.
Yeah, well, we are an uncensored show, so we don't stray from any commentary.
Yeah, we'll talk about it all, you know?
But going back to your career again, you fought a lot of tough guys right when you first started. How much amateur experience did you have, and how did you get through those fights and knock the guys out like that?
Well, you know what? Here's a weird thing. When I was 10 years old, I went to the gym for the first time, September of 72. And in September of 72, I trained September, October, November, December, January the 9th, the day before my 11th birthday, and I sparred for the first time. And when I did, I sparred with a kid who was about 25 pounds heavier than me, but he was 11 years old. And I beat him silly. My father was training me at the time, and the gym trainer was offended that I did so well on my first day against a kid who had been in the gym for a year. So he put in a 13-year-old that was only about 5 pounds heavier, but he was one of the most accomplished junior Olympic boxers in the gym. And I looked at my father with this look of fear. I was more afraid of my father, by the way, than anybody else. I'm more afraid of my father than getting shot in the head. Because he was that difficult of a human being. He was that controlling and that violent and that vicious. And I looked at him, and he looked at me, and he said, "You can do this." And I literally wanted to crap in my pants. That's how upset I was. And I turned around, the bell rang, and the next 3 minutes was a very big blur. But at the end of the 3 minutes, every amateur, every pro, every onlooker, parent, brother, sister, trainer, everybody in the gym, give me a standing ovation for 10 minutes. And that day, I believed I was special. By the time I was 15 years old, I was beating grown men, 26, 27 years old, at will. I mean, I could do whatever I wanted, and nothing they could do about it. That's a really euphoric high. That is a wicked high. That's worse than that better than any drug you could ever get your hands on. To be that powerful and that strong and that smart and that good at that young age, for you to beat grown men, I was, you know, I would have walked with my chest out, my chin up. I thought I could be somebody. And as an amateur, I won every state tournament I ever entered. I won the regionals every year, and I placed third in the nationals, which is not bad. I didn't have a lot of experience, but I worked in the gym hard, and I worked for pros. Always guys bigger than me, always guys that hit harder than me, but I didn't care.
Awesome.
I just thought it was going to better me eventually.
Yeah, Bobby, I remember seeing you on Sundays on NBC back in 1980, back in spring of 1980. You were fighting a lot Sunday afternoons then, and you always carried yourself that way, like, yep, I'm going to win this thing. And you were always a young guy.
Well, and here's the thing. I didn't talk garbage. I just said, listen, this is why I'm going to win.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and 44 out of 52 times I was right.
Yeah, it's funny. Michael Jordan said something to the effect of, you know, it ain't being conceited if you just say what you can do and what you're going to do. And you
right.
do it.
Right. He can do it.
Yeah, exactly. So you're involved with this Find a Dream. Tell us a little bit about that and how you got wrapped up with those guys.
Well, a very good friend of mine, Rod Riccardi, started the organization with a couple of his people. And he asked me if I would be considered being a celebrity board member and contribute to the cause. And I certainly. And I know back in my own life, as I think back to when I was a kid and we were poor, I mean, there were days when I lived in Orange, East Orange, and we'd eat oatmeal for breakfast and for dinner. Couldn't do it. That was it. So that was one big thing, old people could feed the whole family breakfast and dinner. And I know what it was to want to go to tournaments that I couldn't afford to. I know what it was to want to go to certain programs and boxing camps I couldn't go to. They had no money. And think about this. If you have a child who has a dream, have a child without a dream, that's an extremely sad thing. But no child should not have dreams. Well, imagine that you have a child with dreams and he just cannot ever approach realizing them because of a financial situation. That's twice as sad. So I immediately loaned my name to the cause and jumped in, because if you can make a difference in one life, and I know it's a cliche saying, but I know where I was little, in the local Lions Club, and a couple of the local businesses, saw me running up and down the street, running miles and miles every day, saw a couple of clips in the paper, how I was doing this and doing that. Without their help, without their donations, I don't make it to those regional and national tournaments that make me special. Without winning them, you don't get a reputation. Without a reputation, you never get looked at by the real big guys. And I know I probably wouldn't turn out quite as good as I am had I not had that help. So, in retrospect, if I can help, I'm going to help every day.
Awesome. Yeah, it kind of reminds me of the old McKeon Post in Dorchester, Massachusetts there that I used to box at when I was a real little kid. And, you know, all those guys were volunteers, and there was that program had been going on since my uncles were little kids. Yeah, there's our 90-second warning, so do you have any final thoughts or anybody you want to give a shout-out to, Bobby?
You know what? I just give a shout-out to every person, whether it's kids or their grown. Follow your dreams. Chase your dreams, but chase them honestly. Chase without the garbage, without the drugs, without the things that'll take you off the path. So, chase them.
Well, it's been a great pleasure to chat with you tonight, and love to follow up with you at a later date at some point and do round two.
You guys have my number. You feel free. Just give me a little heads up, and we'll be good.
All right.
Take
all
care.
Right.
Thank you very much. Excellent.
Have a good night. All right, folks, that just about does it for us. This is Rebel Rousing Rich Bergeron signing off, and until next week.
This is the tornado, and I'm out.
And Psychic Tom's going to go tell a fortune.
All right, you guys enjoy the fights this weekend.
Yeah,
we'll
talk more about UFC 152 next week.
All right.
Yeah, I'll probably get a hold of you when I'm on my way to Boston.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, folks.
Thanks a lot to our sponsors. Check out the site, fightnewsunlimited.com. Later.